Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Russ Avison right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is another Thursday night. It is 7 o'clock here at LA Talk Radio in beautiful downtown Sherman Oaks, California. And it was really nice. I'm sorry?
I was just saying, what part are you looking at? Beautiful downtown.
Well, I see lights.
Okay.
This is, again, LA Talk Radio. This is The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, sitting in studio tonight with my not-so-often co-host, Russ Avison.
Hello.
And I have to say, Russ, today was a gorgeous day.
It was, after all the friggin' rain we've been having.
Oh, my God. It was dry. I mean, Anything would have been good.
It was kind of cold.
Yeah, I don't think it ever got above 57 today.
But you know, anybody who's listening in the Midwest or East Coast says, what? That's T-shirt weather.
Screw you.
I know.
I'm in shorts.
They would love this stuff. But it was beautiful today.
It was gorgeous. And it's just like, wow, you know, here we are. So anyway, The Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing, the nice people at Black Dog. They are in business to help new writers and struggling writers find a way into the publishing business or into how to get their books or their stuff published. And that number is 805-795-3165. And give them a call. They'd be more than happy to help you out and buy. Out West Marketing, our Out West Boutique and Cultural Center, not so much. Out West Marketing is their new website, www.outwestmarketing.com. And go there. They've got everything Western. That's Bobby Jean, who will be here next week with me. And let me see. I think that's going to be about it for right now, other than since 2009. A long time ago.
Yes.
Target Freight is a TFM truckload, has had a full truckload service that's the best in the industry. They go to great lengths to secure the most competitive rates possible. TFM also provides unmatched customer support from our dedicated truckload division. In an effort to streamline our customers' overall shipping efficiency, TFM provides real-time updates on all lanes. Call TFM today at 1-844-653-7789. Talk to Mike Matruski. He'd be more than happy to set you up. And tell them you heard it here in The Writer's Block. They'll have a little something extra for you. And if you're an LTL shipper, which is less than truckload, as Russ knows, we know you're looking for the best rates with the least possible hassle. Call Target Freight Management today. Their customized transportation management system is just a ticket to getting your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight Management today at 888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web for both truckload and LTL. Call today. You won't be disappointed, and I know you won't be because they're really nice folks. Okay.
So, all right. Wait a minute. Yeah. Something else.
Go ahead.
Something else. You mentioned Black Dog Publishing
earlier.
I just received something from them.
Oh, you did?
I did. This is, first of all, it's a book.
It is.
And it has a pretty awesome photograph on the front.
It's pretty nice, huh?
It is. And this is a book called End of Line. And it's brand new. It's just off the presses. And you know who wrote this?
I did.
Yes, Jim Christina. Tell us about this. It looks great.
This is a book that's a slight departure from my normal series about the hunter and Stryker, although Stryker does appear in this book. It is about an aging lawman that's one of the traveling marshals that used to go marshal the towns up and around the Badlands in New Mexico and Texas. And he's come to this town and up in the northeast corner of New Mexico in the mountains called End of Line. And it is a town that is on its last legs, on its end of line. And as he finds out about halfway through the book, he is also on his end of the line. And he's got to take care of the stuff in this town before he goes. And it's a great story.
And next month when I'm on, I will have a review of this.
Good. I hope you do.
It looks really good.
It's really a good story. I'm fairly proud of that book.
Fairly.
Okay. So, this is what's going on tonight. We have an author calling in, or actually, we've got her on the line right now. She is, my God, she's written a terrific story, I have to tell you. and it was as a school project. But I'm going to give you a short bio on her first. As a teen in Mobile, Alabama, Jody Kane Smith listened to as her grandmother told her the gripping story of an adolescent spent in 1930s rural Alabama and the murder trial that altered her life. The tale became The Woods at Barlow Bend, Jody's award-winning debut novel. Nah, whether she's written any other books or not, I don't know, but we'll find out. While attending, add to group call, that would be Henry, and let's see. Henry, are you with us? Oh, I hate it when this happens. Okay, is anybody here? Okay.
I am.
Oh, Jody, you're here. All right, well, Henry should be here with you. Henry? Henry?
He's disappearing.
He always does. Anyway, hang tough, Jody. while attending the University of Southern Alabama, or South Alabama, where Jody earned her BFA, which is what, Jody?
A Bachelor of Fine Arts in Theater.
Right. She met her husband, Jay. They began their life in the Army, on the Army Road in 2001. As an Army wife, she lived in six different states, spanning from the extreme heat of Texas to the blizzards of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Not going to go there,
no,
Russ.
No.
Where she earned an MA in school counseling at Northern Michigan University. In spring 2016, with her new, now retired hubby and darling boy, Bay, Jody moved her home to her beloved Mobile, Alabama. So there you go. Jody Kane Smith's feature articles and columns have appeared in Chicken Soup for the Military Spouse's Soul, the Pettigrew Review, the Savannah Morning News, and the Fort Hood Sentinel. I was at Fort Hood. She also serves as a content editor for Clemson Road Creative. Would you please welcome to the writer's block, Jody Kane Smith.
Hey, Jody.
Welcome,
Hi.
Jody. Okay, we have Henry calling
Hi,
in again.
Friend.
So let me see. Answering this call, we'll put your active call on hold. All right, I'm going to see if I can get you guys linked. Well, he just went away again. Wait a minute. There he is. Henry, try again. That's all I can tell you. Anyway, Henry's our Western Roundup guy. He calls in every other week. So, anyway, tell us.
Okay.
Is this the only book that you've written, Jody?
I have my current work in progress is with my agent now.
Okay.
And I'm still struggling with some revisions mm-hmm. with it, so mm-hmm. she's getting a little frustrated with me, I'm sure, because I keep pulling it back and saying, no, I have something else. to do with it, but I mean, if Barlow Bend hadn't sold to a publisher so quickly, I would probably still be revising it. I'm one of these people that just is never happy.
Okay, hang tough. I got Henry back on the line. Let's see if I can get you both on here. So don't go away.
Okay,
Henry, you there?
I'm here, but I'm getting a new phone. This is ridiculous.
Well, no kidding. All right, I don't know. Let me see. We still have Jody. Add to group call. Okay, there's Jody, are you still with us? Jody? Oh, well, Henry, I know I got you because I can hear something in the background. Okay.
Yeah, you can hear me.
I can hear you, and it says we got Jody, too.
Well, hello.
Oh, you're there.
Hello, Jody.
Okay, this is
Hi.
That's Henry Park.
Hi.
This is Jody Smith.
How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Okay.
I'm very good, thank you.
We're going to give Henry the radio for a couple of minutes, and then we're going to get rid of him, and we're going to go back to our conversation.
Wait. Before you start, Henry, I got to ask you, because we always talked about Westworld, and it finally came out. We saw the first season. What did you think?
I was delighted with it. I was, in a way, it got to be less and less Western as it went on, but I just found it very exciting. I really enjoyed it. How about yourself?
I loved it. It was, it was very loosely based upon the film, but that was something to draw you in, and then the technology in it was unbelievable. Right. That was what I loved.
Right.
Oh, yeah, I'm just sorry that it's going to probably be 2018 before we get to the next season, just because production with all those effects is so involved.
Yeah, but I thought it was quite good. It kept me going. I had to watch the last episode three times to really get the full grasp of what was going on.
The giant impact.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I just rewatched it this Friday or Saturday because of that. It's just so many. Things that they wrapped up and pulled together. that, one viewing was not enough.
Yeah. Well, anyway, go ahead. I just wanted to find out what
Give us the roundup, Henry.
All right. Well, guess who I interviewed this weekend?
Oh, I have no clue.
One of the great blonde bombshells of the 50s and 60s, right up there with Marilyn Monroe and Jane Mansfield.
Who?
Mamie Van Doren.
Oh, my God. Is she still alive?
She just
not after the interview.
Excuse me, 87 this month.
Holy mackerel.
And she was so much fun. She sounds like about 35 on the phone.
Yeah.
But anyhow, I had a great interview with her. She didn't do tons of Westerns, but she did Star in the Dust with John Agar, a rodeo picture, a German Western, a Filipino Western. And she did one I didn't even know was a Western, a musical one in 55, The Second Greatest Sex, which is not about last week. It's a Western version of Aristophanes' Lysistrata.
Wow.
Yeah, do you know that one where the women refuse to sleep with the men until they stop fighting?
Nope. Yeah, I'm still on the Filipino
in
2015.
Western. Yeah, but it's still a Western.
Wow.
And I've gotten back to posting the roundup every week. I just posted a review of Running Wild, which is a modern-day Western about a wealthy widow who learns that she's about to lose the family ranch. And to keep that from happening, she takes on a prison program where convicts are trained to handle horses. And it's an entertaining film, but it really does have a serious point about the plight of thousands of wild horses on government land.
Mm-hmm.
And beautiful Sharon Stone, who is also one of the producers, is the villain of the piece as the animal activist from hell. She's just wonderfully evil. let's see. Underground is back, coming back to WGN for season 2 on March 8th. Have you watched that?
I caught snippets of it a couple times, but no, I have not watched the series.
I hope they run season 1 before they start season 2, because it's a terrific, really fascinating story about the Underground Railroad.
Right.
Oh, and I know some True West subscribers have already gotten their March issue, and there I have an article about the series from the point of view of the production designer and the costume designer.
And well, they do a good job from what I've seen.
Up. I'm sorry?
I said they do a good job from what I've seen.
Oh, yeah, just beautiful stuff. And just the history, it's just, I highly recommend it. Really a fascinating show. And coming to the roundup, I had a great talk with stuntman Walter Scott, who has great stories about working with John Wayne on The Cowboys and with Clint Eastwood in The Outlaw Josie Wales.
Hmm.
And let's see. And of course, it was just President's Day.
Right.
So I looked at some of the better portrayals of presidents in films. Have you guys got any favorites?
Henry Fonda's Abe Lincoln.
Terrific. I always loved Brian Keith as Teddy Roosevelt in The Wind and the Lion.
Oh, yes. For sure. For sure. And actually, what's his name? Cliff? Go ahead.
I was going to say, there's not that many choices for George Washington, because, I mean, there's a million credits on IMDb, but they're almost all like comedy sequences and dream sequences where some idiot meets George Washington. But I thought Barry Bostwick back in the 83 miniseries was terrific.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he was, actually, now that you think about it. And what's his name? David Morse also played Washington.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Gosh, can't think what that was in.
I
but yeah, he was very good.
Did you ever
see Walter Houston as Lincoln in D.W. Griffith's film, Abraham Lincoln?
No.
It's one of his very few talkies, and Houston is terrific. It's the film is in some ways an apology, I think, for Birth of a Nation.
Oh, but, maybe, huh?
Very, very good stuff. And, there's also... And nobody sees this, but he's very good. Bill Oberst Jr. in Abraham Lincoln versus Zombies. Admittedly, the history is shaky.
Oh, yeah.
But his reading of the Gettysburg Address is exceptional. I brought it to school. I was going to show it to kids. And then I realized there are too many people getting eaten in the background. but it really does a wonderful job.
Well, I mean, there also was recently, there was Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And also,
this was the cheap version of it
right.
from the Asylum Film Company.
Right.
I didn't see the big one.
And then Bill Reilly's book, Killing Reagan, which was done as a film with Tim Matheson as Ronald Reagan. I thought he was very good in that that
I did not see it.
He was. He was terrific.
Just throwing my two cents.
Okay. Oh, here's a bit of trivia for you, Henry. Tim Matheson was in a Western in the 60s. With Kurt Russell.
Tim Matheson, well, he did several TV ones. He sort of closed off, Bonanza and The Virginian. He did several.
He had his own.
Wait, what was the series? The Quest.
There you go. You get the Cupid doll.
It was sort of a reworking of The Searchers. It's very good.
It was pretty good for its time. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
As far as I remember, I haven't seen it since the 60s, but it was great stuff back then.
Go over to Shireko's house. He's got the Western Channel all the time, and it's always on there.
Okay, I'll do that. And needless to say, you can read all about this and more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
And we love you, Henry, and thank you so much, and we'll be seeing you at the Cowboy Festival in April.
You bet you will. I look forward to it.
And, of course, as always, you're welcome to stroll in here whenever you want to on a Thursday night.
Well, thank you very much. I'll do that.
Well, I hope you do.
Boots.
There you go. And that's just because the crap gets deep. Talk to you later,
Henry. Bye-bye.
You betcha.
Okay, Jody, you still with us?
She fell asleep.
Or did you just get disgusted and leave? Jody, I can hear you in the background. Jody?
No, that wasn't her.
I know. Jody, are you there? Jody? Group call. No, you're still on the group call. Jody? Well, I guess I better hang up and call her again. Oh, there she is. Oh, she's on hold. How did that happen? Are you back with us?
Hello?
Okay, hi.
Hi.
Okay.
Master of all technology, Christina at work.
This Skype stuff, it just makes me insane. Not that I'm not already insane, mind you, but it makes me even more so.
All right, so I want to get into this book.
Me too.
I really liked it.
Okay. Oh, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Why don't you give us a little thumbnail sketch of what the book's about?
There you go.
Well, basically, in 1993 or 1992, I believe, my grandmother, I had a school project on the Great Depression, and the assignment was to discover what life was like during the Great Depression and present that information in any format that we wanted to. And I've always been a better public speaker than I am right now, but I've always been a pretty good public speaker. And so I was like, well, I will record my grandmother and I will present the interview to my AP history class. And I was sure to get an A on it is all I was thinking. And I really needed an A in AP history to make up for my AP chemistry class. So went to my grandmother and what I thought was going to be a really quick interview turned into an entire afternoon. And I thought she was just going to give me the typical story. You know, the struggles of the Great Depression and everything, you know, basically just retell the Grapes of Wrath is really what I was expecting. What I learned was that the Great Depression didn't affect my grandmother or really even the people of rural Alabama at all because they're a very self-sufficient people. So my grandmother's family, for instance, they, at the time they had two cars, they, you know, had a small plot of land that they grew their own food. They had their own cattle. My great-grandfather had a couple of businesses. And then on January 31st, 1934, which was the last day of hunting rifle season for the hunting season in Alabama that year, my great-grandmother Addie was killed in a very strange hunting incident. Rumors swelled after the incident, and which happened in the woods at Barlow Bend, which is this very tiny little town in Alabama. It's on the Alabama River, and it's really a lumber town. But after Addie was shot, and the only person who was witness to the shooting was Hubbard, and all the rumors started swirling around these little towns, Hubbard ended up being arrested and tried for Addie's murder. And through the murder trial is where my grandmother, who attended the entire trial, she learned of all of these rumors and some of the truth within their marriage. And so at first, when I first listened to this story, I just thought it was fascinating. And I couldn't wait to get back to my AP history class and tell this story. And I very much got an A on that project. I was like, yes. And my GPA is secure. But because as a junior in high school, that's all I was worried about. I was like, please let my GPA be good enough to get into college. But anyway, so 20 years later, this story was still rattling around in my head. And by this point, most everyone who was involved in the story, to include my grandmother, had passed away. And so I interviewed the one family member who was left and asked Granny's children, who were still alive, what they knew of the incident. Even my own mother didn't know anything about the story. Granny had not told anyone this story except me. And I have no idea, other than the simple fact that I asked, why she would choose me to tell this story to. And so I was like, well, okay, then I will, take to the internet and do some old fashioned research, digging through court records and things like that. And what I discovered was that the story that Granny told me was true, and that the things she recounted that afternoon in the early 90s actually happened. And then I discovered more things, more skeletons that she didn't reveal on that afternoon. And so at first I thought I was going to be writing a mystery novel. And as I wrote it, I discovered I wasn't writing a mystery novel, that I was writing my grandmother's coming of age story. And that's when all of a sudden this project meant so much more to me. And it's because I miss my grandmother dearly. And, 20 years after her death, I still miss her. And so this book became very much my way of honoring her and honoring what a gutsy and ballsy 14-year-old girl she must have been. And so I just had a blast writing it.
How long did it take you? How long did it take you to actually write it from the time you decided, okay, I'm going to put this together as a book?
I spent about 6 months researching it. Luckily, when I decided to do this, my husband and I were preparing for another permanent change of station. We were moving from Texas to South Carolina. And so it was the perfect excuse for me to quit my job and concentrate just on writing. And so I got to research this book full-time for 6 months, and then I wrote full-time on just this book for a year, because when I was writing it, I had to also learn how to write a novel.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was, I studied theater in college. I didn't study creative writing. And so the first thing, honestly, I did in order to write this book was I bought a book on how to write a book.
Okay.
Okay, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, no, that's right. In fact, who did we have on the show that does the writing books?
I knew how to tell a story.
I don't remember.
But I did.
2 years. Hmm? Russ and I are having a conversation. Just go ahead. We're just going to.
Let me tell you, Jody, there was a guest on the show last year who actually has a series of books on creative writing and how to write screenplays, how to write novels.
Right.
And I was trying to figure out who it was.
Trying to remember who it was.
That's all. You probably read her book.
No, and honestly, I can't even remember now which book. And it was on my Kindle and has mysteriously disappeared, because a writer friend asked, what book did you buy in order to write Barlow Bend?
Hmm.
And I looked and searched, and I have no idea what happened in my Kindle app that made this book disappear. And so now I think it must have been a magic book.
Well, whatever it was, it worked.
Well, it showed up when you needed it, and it went away when you didn't need it anymore.
Yeah,
there you
exactly.
go. That's a magic
book.
But
it was things like, how do I write dialogue? Even though I've been telling stories and you know, I'm an actress, so I know how to convey a character. I know how to create a character. I didn't know how to put it all together. And the idea of sitting down and writing an entire novel seemed so overwhelming that I needed a little bit of guidance. And so I spent that year writing, going to creative writing classes, writing workshops, classes on the publishing industry, things like that. And so the agreement with my husband was to give me a year to write a book. And if at the end of that year I didn't have a manuscript, a rough draft, then I would go back to work as a Department of the Army civilian. And the other part of the deal was, in the meantime, he would never have to go to the grocery store, but I would do all the grocery shopping. Because he doesn't like to go to the grocery store.
I don't either.
And lo and behold, at the end of that year, I had a manuscript, I had a rough draft, and Jay had only been to the grocery store maybe twice. That was it. So then it became, I'm never taking a job, a traditional job ever again in my life. So it's
really
gone from there.
Good for you. That's a great story. And you know, many times we have authors on the show that they aren't as explicit about their process. And I think it's wonderful to hear the way you say it. I'm not an author. Jim has written, I don't know, 8,700 books or something.
No, 13.
13 books. But I'm not a writer.
Wow.
So my perspective is a lot different. And what you just explained made me think, oh my gosh, okay, I could do this. I could see how you could plan that out and work it. But it's always been a mystery to me.
Well, it's not that we've never told you could do it.
I know. I'm just a loser.
So but, see, now you have someone here that will push you towards it. Push him, Jody.
I am also, as far as process, I am not one of these stream of conscious writers, or a panther, as they call them now. I have to, you know, write out the plot outline. I storyboard the entire novel, and then I put myself on a writing schedule that I'm writing, you know, at these specific times every day, writing a certain number of words a day. When I have a brand new project to start where I've got to get that rough draft done, that's the way that works for me. For other people, I'm so jealous of the panthers and the stream of conscious writers that can, you know, the Sam Shepherds of the world that can just in a night churn out True West or, you know, some fabulous play or, you know, a novella or something like that in a weekend.
Sure.
I can't do that.
I can't either.
It takes me a while.
How about creating? I think your next book should be a how-to book and include all your storyboards and the processes you went through.
Yeah.
And get people who want to be writers that just don't have that little nudge that they need to go over the edge and actually do it.
Right.
That might be a great story for them.
That would be fun.
Yeah. You could do that, too.
That would be fun to write.
We'll actually let you, and then we'll bring you back on, and you can tell us about your how-to book.
Oh, there you go.
All right, so I've got a couple questions about your book, because as I was reading, first of all, the one thing that I found myself having to do is take you and your grandmother and kind of separate it, because I continued to think of you as basically Hattie telling the story.
Yes.
Okay. Well, no, I'm saying Hattie was your grandmother, and she's the one who told you the story. And I had a, you know, there's a one of your a picture, you know, your press picture was there, and I saw your picture. And so as I'm going through the story, I'm thinking of your face going through the process of what was happening in the story. That to me was really exciting, because it drew me in. I was right there. But some of the writing that you did, like your court scenes, I'm curious as to how you did this, because I could visualize the entire court scene,
right?
All those chapters. It was so realistic to me. Did you
That's
have
fantastic. Thank you.
Did you have transcripts to go back to, or did you have to kind of recreate what happened? How did that work out?
Unfortunately, the court transcripts burned in a fire in 1957 when the Monroeville, or the courthouse in Grove Hill, was destroyed by a fire. What we still had, though, a woman named Louise Andrews found the grand jury indictment and the bail hearing documents in the probate court basement in Grove Hill.
Oh, wow. How lucky for you.
I know. She's this wonderful little old lady who for months I called Betty in the basement. Because when she first introduced herself to me over the phone, I couldn't understand exactly what she said. And so I just named her. And
Betty
I
in the
decided
basement.
She was like my little archive angel down there digging through boxes for me. But she started in Grove Hill as a volunteer because they were basically just going to trash all these records. And she was like, no, I'll go down there and I'll organize all of them. And so she organized all these records, and I called her, I guess, when she was partway through this project, and she searched all these records for me and were able to find these documents. So from those documents, there were certain things that I could make educated guesses at. And that's why the book is fiction, because I was having to make educated guesses for certain things within the trial. I had to change the names of the men that were witnesses for the grand jury, and it was because of one witness in particular, because of the educated guess that I made on his participation with what his testimony would be. Because what I was able to do from the names of the grand jury, then I could locate them on the 1930, 1935, and 1940 U.S. Census. Mm-hmm. And so I could track their movement through Alabama. I could also track their employment history through Alabama, through the census records. And so because there was no other witness to this incident, I could look at their employment records, where they live. You know, thank goodness for Google Earth, because I could then put in their address and pinpoint exactly where they lived on a map. And one of the witnesses happened to grow up right next door to Addie Andrus. And I was like, isn't that interesting? So it was from the details that I discovered about all of the trial witnesses that I was able to piece together the testimony in the book. And then also spending a lot of really hot days in these little Alabama towns to get a sense of the people of the place, just how hot and miserable you can be when there's absolutely no breeze and it's 105% humidity out. So it's a lot different than living on the coast. So I tell you that so that I could create a full experience for the reader when they were in the courtroom.
Right.
And I also approached it, I approached the whole novel, but especially those scenes, as a theater director of what stage pictures was I going to create? What did I want the audience to hone in on as far as those scenes go? And that is the only way that I know that I feel comfortable drawing a reader in, is to take that director's approach to the scene. And then adding in Hattie's voice, I would very much play out Hattie in my home office, to the point where I'm pretty sure my husband thought I was losing my mind while writing that book. Because I'm pacing the floor and talking as Hattie.
Well, you have to.
Like, what are you doing? I mean, it's my process. So other people might think I'm crazy, but it worked for me. It worked for that book especially.
There you go.
Jim, do you ever do that when you're working on dialogue? Do you actually speak it?
Yes.
You do?
Oh, yeah, you have to. Because every bit of dialogue has a pentameter to it.
Right.
Whether you realize it or not. And you can write it and it looks right, but when you speak it, you go, oh, nah, that's not it. Then you go and rewrite it. And then sometimes I've written pieces of dialogue 4, 5, 6, 7 times.
And then what do you do if you have an accent in the dialogue? Because that's got to make it doubly hard.
You phonetically spell it.
Well, you do?
Yeah.
But do you still get the right cadence with
That's
it?
A little bit. That's a little bit more difficult. Like when I was when I did the return, that had a lot of Cajun in it,
right?
And the Cajun was to fictionalize Cajun and put it on a page and make these people speak that is a whole different world. Well, actually, trying to find original Cajun.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't speak that anymore. It's a bastardization of the Cajun language now. It's mostly what they call anglicized English, and Cajun English, which is they throw a little French in there. They make you guarantee,
Yeah.
But it's not that's not the way Cajun actually initially was. Cajun was a combination of English and French, and Canadian and French Canadian. And what's the other race down there? Creole.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they were all just a mishmash down there in the middle of the swamp, and they all interbred and everybody, and so the language became its own. It became alive, but no longer. That's pretty much a dead language. So you can find stuff on the internet, but it's not readily available.
Gotcha. And Jody, did you speak most of your book out loud at one time or another as you were trying to put it together?
Oh yes, and if not the first draft that I wrote, at 10 o'clock in the morning, I always read aloud my manuscript before deciding that anything is permanent, so to speak. I do a lot of, on writing dialogue, I use the phase-out method because most of my characters, like my current work in progress, Jubilee Bells, is set in South Mobile County. So you've got a little bit of that Cajun Creole influence because the little fishing community I grew up in has a lot of Creole in that community. And if you were to write an entire novel in a southern dialect or a Creole dialect or something like that, it gets very tiresome on the eye.
Yeah, you'd have to go kill yourself.
Yeah.
It's tough.
I like to establish the character and, change, give me to gimme and things like that at the beginning of the novel. And then after that character is established, then I'll retain the rhythm and the pace at which the character speaks, but the words and the grammar the dialect phases out of it.
Right.
Because it just becomes too heavy in the dialect, and it becomes immature.
Right. Well, I mean,
it's caricatures all of a sudden instead of real characters.
I gave myself a double whammy in this book I wrote called The Return, because not only did I have Cajun speakers, but I also had an Irishman in there.
Oh,
that became somewhat of a chore. It was definitely hard to do, but I think I did it pretty good.
But then the critique groups I belonged to, and it was one time for a friend of mine, I was doing just what was supposed to be a proofread of a novel, and the novelist was Russian writing in English. English was her second language. What she had not mastered was English slang. And so all of the dialogue was so formal.
Ah, you have a call coming in. You actually have a call. So Hank, let me get it for you. This is the Writer's Block. This is Jim.
Hey, Jim. This is John calling. John Lenore, I email you once in a while.
Yeah, John, how are you?
I had a question for Jody.
Okay, let me see if I can get add Jody to the group call here, and we'll get you both up there. Jody, are you here? Jody? Oh, damn it, not again.
Yeah.
Let me see, 906. There you go, Jody. Jody.
Hello?
Oh, Jody, you there?
Yes.
Okay, John, you still with us? I got rid of John. Oh, my God, this is so much fun. Okay, let's see. 248. I don't know. John, try to call back. That's all I can tell you.
I'm going to step out for
some
coffee.
Please call
back.
Go
get, John, call back. Anyway, back to your back
we'll,
to your
we'll
story.
We'll try this technology thing one more time.
Nah, just it's blame me. It's my fault. It is.
Okay. No.
Oh, here we go.
So that was one of.
Okay, Jody, we still have you. John, do we have you?
Yes.
Okay, good. Yay, John, are you still with us? No. But Jody, we have you.
Yes.
All right, bye, John. Okay. Anyway, go ahead, Jody.
Oh, no, it's just what
Hello?
I wanted. Yes?
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, somebody's on our line. This is weird.
Oh.
Who are you trying to get through to?
Well, we're not trying to get through to anybody. I think we have people calling us. Is this? I mean, I had a John Lenore, but he we had to dump him because we couldn't get him on the air.
Did you just have Henry on the radio?
I did.
Okay, you've got Henry Park's house.
Oh, well, I don't need.
And I know he already did the radio show.
Right, he already did. Oh, this is fun. Okay, well, we're just having a ball.
I don't know who you need to get through to.
Oh, I don't
Henry,
either.
Yeah, Henry was off already.
I know. So go back and feed him something.
Okay.
All right, bye.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Wow, we already talked to Henry, so. Anyway. Wow, this has been fun.
Hey, Jody, this is the most professional episode we've ever done.
Oh, my God, this is horrid. Anyway. I have to ask you a question, and we ask all of our writers this question, and actually Bobby Jean is going to be putting together a book on all the answers that we have from this particular question. And the question is, considering that this radio show is called The Writer's Block, have you ever had writer's block?
I currently have it right now.
Oh, well, there you go. And what does yours feel like?
What I can tell you is it is the worst thing in the world. And I've got, like, a ton of excuses as to what led to this.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not the type of person that deals with excuses very well. Like, I don't accept them. I'll accept excuses from others to a certain extent.
Sure.
But I don't accept them from myself. And so, you know, and I write professionally as a content editor, and I'm doing fine with that. I can write all day long and make the most boring business topics sound entertaining and hilarious and all this kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And but as far as the last couple of months, it's been since Christmas when I sit down to write fiction, it's as if all of a sudden I have forgotten how to do it, and it's just paralyzing experience.
Mm-hmm.
That it's just the worst thing ever. And so, of course, you know, my go-to resolution for anything in my life is just power through it. So I have written some of the most horrendous garbage that will never see the light of day since Chris. I mean, it's really, it is garbage. And sometimes I will end the paragraph with, this is straight up trash.
I like it.
But you keep doing it.
Well, no, you can't stop.
But
that's
I know if I keep doing this and I keep being disciplined in it and I get back into that Barlow Bin mindset, that Jubilee Bells mindset when I wrote the first draft of that 2 years ago, I know if I can get back there, if I can push through whatever this is and get back to it, that I will rediscover this ability.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, it's as if I have completely forgotten.
You have a block.
And I professionally, it's the most, and you can see from my bio, I'm professionally, I was a bit of a gypsy for a very long time because of moving around with the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And so this has been the most frustrating professional experience I've ever had, no matter what career I was in.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've never felt paralyzed in this life.
Well, then you're a writer, because that's what we all get that. We all get frustrated.
So frustrating.
Well, it can be.
Point,
it can be.
I mean,
go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying these are the days that I wish I drank more.
Well, okay, now I have good news for you. Because I did your package today. It will be going out in the mail tomorrow for priority delivery. And it is an official Writer's Block coffee mug.
But you don't have to put coffee in it.
But you don't have to put coffee in it. You can put wine or scotch or whatever.
It's Mardi Gras here right now.
Well, there you go. See?
So nobody's drinking coffee.
Well, I'll wager not.
Just to make it
the
next morning until, you know.
And actually, we'll hold gin quite nicely.
And we can start.
Yeah, it'll hold wine, gin, vodka, scotch, bourbon.
That's,
you know,
that's awesome. Thank you.
You're very welcome. It's a very cool mug too. So the only thing we ask is that when you get it, take a picture of it with you holding it or on the table and with your book or whatever, and send it to us, and we'll stick it up on our Writer's Block Facebook page.
Great. Hopefully I'll have it by Tuesday, and I will take a picture on Fat Tuesday down on Dolphin Street.
You'll probably have it Saturday.
And so, good. So then I can do a Joe King Day.
There you
go.
So
we can have the Writer's Block coffee mug traveling through Mardi Gras.
Well, you know,
Carnival.
Funny you should say that, because the writer we had on last week carries his around with him. He was traveling all over. And he goes, you know, the funny thing you call me, because I've got your Writer's Block cup right here, and I'm making my tea, and I'm in, I think he was in, like, Utah or Idaho someplace. So, there you go.
Cool.
Well, we're running out of time here.
Writer's Block coffee mug.
There you go. Writer's Block coffee mug. Tell us how they can get a hold of you, or where they can reach you, email, Facebook.
Or more importantly, where they can get your book.
Where they can get your book.
Well, of course, the book is available anywhere online, all the retailers online. It's also, it's probably not in Barnes & Noble out in L.A. I know it's in several Barnes & Noble in the South. Amazon, BNN, BAM, all of that online would probably be the best place for West Coast readers. And it's available in all formats, paperback, ebook, Kindle, all that good stuff.
Cool.
And then if they want to get in touch with me, my website, jodykingsmith.com, is alive and active. Jody King Smith, author, is my Facebook page.
Okay.
And then jodykingsmith@gmail.com, if you want to email me directly. I respond to all those wonderful emails and all of the questions I get.
Oh, that'll change as you get more famous.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That'll change.
What?
Yeah.
That'll change as you get more famous.
Yeah, you just start delete.
Especially the ones that come from the Writer's Block.
There you go.
One of the coolest results of writing this book is I have met family members I had no idea existed.
Well, you told me the other day that you had an aunt that was pretty pissed off at you.
Oh, yeah. And it wasn't because my great-grandfather was accused of murder and was tried for murder. It was the real, true document that proved a couple things about his life that she just went through the roof about.
Well, you know.
And what was sad about that is she hadn't read the book. I still don't think she's read the book. She's not in the book.
Well, she really hasn't got anything to say about it then.
Yeah, I'm like, what are you so upset about?
Yeah, there you go.
Read the book. If you hate it, then you can, you know, post a nasty review on Amazon. That's just fine.
We like it. Well, I hate to cut you off, Ms. Smith. However, we are out of time. So thank you. Thank you for putting up with our foibles tonight. I am so sorry about all this getting... Oh, man. This is the worst that's ever been.
And poor John. John, if you're out there,
John,
call us next week.
Yeah, John, call us next week. Or email Jody directly. She just gave you her email address. So anyway.
I'm crazy like that. I give people my email address. It's not my personal email address.
Well, all good.
But, I've had a great time, and your foibles like took all of my nervousness away.
Oh, good,
so
good,
thank you.
Good. Well, so, see, we had a lot of fun here.
It worked out for the best.
Yeah, it did. It always usually does. Okay, thank you so much for joining us tonight, and it's just been a hoot. So now you can go have that glass of wine.
Okay, cool.
Or whatever. Okay.
Thanks, Jody.
Thanks, Jody.
Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Jody Kane Smith. And I really do apologize for the foibles, but, you know, crap happens. Anyway, we have the Cowboy Festival coming up next April. April 22nd, 23rd. That's going to be at Hart Park in New Hall. And it's we're down, I don't even know exactly where we're at this year, but I know we have a 20 by 50 tent.
So,
we have a lot of authors
So for
there.
Somebody who has never been to this, what would I expect if I come?
There's all kinds of vendors. There's the Buckaroo Bookshop is where everybody usually winds up because that's where all the fun authors are.
So where do you go?
The Buckaroo Bookshop, yeah. Well, actually, I'm hosting two discussion groups. One Saturday, one Sunday, kind of like a little mini writer's block.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, it's kind of fun, and this is the first year we've been able to do that, so that ought to be different, if nothing else. Bobby Jean and her husband Jim actually are the hosts for the Buckaroo Bookshop. So they'll be on site, and it's a lot of fun. At the places, there's a lot of people walking around in Old West clothing and. You can buy hats and clothes and boots and saddles and buy whatever you want. I mean, that's all there. So, and that is going to be April again. That is April 22nd, 23rd at William S. Hart Park in New Hall. And the parking is over off of Railroad Avenue, and then they bus you in. So tickets are like $10. It's really worth it. It's really worth your time.
All right.
Okay. And then we have, that's it for us tonight. That's
it. I guess.
We're done. So thank you, everybody, for joining us tonight. And I'm sorry about the screw-up, but, you know, crap happens. And there you have it. So for Russ Avison.
Thank you, sir.
And myself, Jim Christina, and Bobby Jean Bell, we thank you for joining us. We will be back next week with Bobby Jean and a writer, Rosa Latimer. She's written several books about the Harvey girls. And that'll be an interesting conversation. And until then. This is LA Talk Radio, and we are out of here.